Now, the one thing that we talked to you about in the past is you have a memorabilia collection that is just amazing. Now, when did you start collecting, and what are some of your prize collectibles that you have? Because you have quite a collection. I know you've told me this in the past, and wow, I'd love to hear about it.
Well, growing up, my dad had started getting Sports Illustrated mid-60s. And my brother's 5 years older than me. So, and he was the good caretaker of this. I had all of them from 65 through. And so I do hunt and fish a little bit. I have Latour Golf Course right across the bayou from where I live. So if I want to go play golf, I can play golf anytime. But I'm not a big golfer anymore. And so if I have any hobby, it's that. But I started collecting probably mid-80s when it really started to hit for me. I'm going to say I probably have 30, 35,000 cards.
Wow.
I have the cards from when I was a kid, and
your mom never threw them away. Most of us, they did.
Because they were cleaning out a garage, and she was like, do you still want those cards? I was like, oh yeah, I still want them. And tell you a funny story. This happened a few years back. I had a lady, and she was in her 80s, and her husband had died 3 years earlier. So she says, oh, Mike, I know you collect things. A few magazines, Sports Illustrated, that my husband has. I said, well, okay, how many are you talking about here? She was like, well, he's been collecting them for quite a number of years. And I need the space, because she would buy these porcelain figures. And she said, I need to get it out of my kind of built-in garage. It's not a garage anymore. It's like another room. I said, okay. I said, you know, what do you want for them? She was like, I'll pay you if you come get them. I just want you to get them out of here. And so we did have a little transaction, her and I. So, because I didn't want to just take it. And so we made a deal, and she was happy with it. He had them from 1962.
Oh, my God.
Everyone until, I'm going to say, 94, 95. And when she said a few, you know, I'm thinking, you know, maybe a couple dozen. I didn't think, you know, we talking about 30 years of Sports Illustrated. So I almost lost the cards one way, and then I gained the SIs another. Autograph stuff, probably 80s, I started collecting for me. So I have every Sports Illustrated now from day one until today.
Wow.
Well, here's the crazy part about it. I live, I guess, about 70 miles from the coast. And so when Hurricane Ida passed, it was pretty rough here. I was spared. I had just a little bit of shingle damage, not a little bit. I had to get them all replaced, but whatever, and some gutter damage. But it wasn't anything major. And so people would call once myself started to work again. People would call and say, oh, you made it okay? I was like, yeah, I'm okay. Family's okay. House is okay. And then their next comment would be, did the memorabilia survive? And I'm like, yeah, the memorabilia survived. Everything was good with it. And so for me, I don't know, probably over 200 autographed baseballs. Probably three dozen bats.
Wow.
Right behind me. This is in my den. I got three. I'm allowed three. So I got three here. But I probably have, you know, close to 50 autographed helmets. Full size.
Wow.
I got, I don't know how many mini helmets. So I got
you have a museum.
Yeah.
Your own stuff, museum.
accumulated and stuff that I can't put out. I don't have enough room. And so most of my real expensive cards are in a safety deposit box, you know, at a bank.
Does humidity affect it at all? Do you have to protect your stuff from the humidity?
I'm protective of them. Like a baby. I'm protective of them. So my two girls were like, Dad, you know, I got a couple grandchildren now. They were like, we weren't even allowed to like touch anything, you know, in your game room. And the grandkids, hey, Pop, look what I got. No, no, go put that ball back. I want to
touch it. It's different with the
you know, and I probably have 100 autographed jerseys. And so it's protecting them and keeping them. And, you know, and one day, kids, grandkids, they can do what they want with them once I'm not around. But, you know, I got quite a bit. So all the SIs would be number one on the list for me, having every one of them. My grandpa was the biggest Yankees fan in the world. So I grew up him talking about Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle, and to get those autographs from Mickey and from Joe. And so that for me is a little bit of having something. And Ted Williams too, even though he didn't like the Red Sox. I mean, he did respect Ted, and he would always say Ted's the greatest hitter of all time. You know, no matter what, no matter how much he loved DiMaggio and Mantle, it was always Ted's the best. So having those three certainly would be in that two spot for me. Three spot, Ali.
Oh, because
growing up and watching Muhammad, you know, because I saw him not quite in it, the prime years of from, say, like 61 through 67, and then the title got stripped away. I probably watched a little of it on TV as a young kid, but I got to see the late 60s, 70s version, the 70s version of Ali. And, you know, he was bigger than life.
Oh, and yeah.
He came to town. Buddy DiLiberto, who was the sports anchor at WWL at that time, he was good friends with Angelo Dundee. Angie Dundee was Ali's trainer.
Sure.
And so he's like, hey, you want to come meet Angie and Muhammad? I'm like, what? So we did a show. Angie comes in, and here's Muhammad Ali. But I was ready. So, you know, I had a glove, I had a couple pitches, and he was so nice. The communication, you understood, wasn't there, but, and he wanted to do little magic tricks for you. You know, he pulled the handkerchief out and stuff. He wanted to sort of entertain you his own way, but just to be there. And, you know, and Angie telling one story after another about Ali. And so having the glove, the pants, the shirts, and he was accommodating. I asked him if he would, and he started out. Yeah. And so he just took his time and autographed everything.
Wow.
When Angie would tell a story he thought was funny, he would just sort of tap him. And you could see almost that he wanted to laugh. You know, but, and God bless him. So those would be, for me, all the Sports Illustrated's, Mantle, DiMaggio, Ted Williams, and Ali. I would put those as the top three for me.
Now, let's say there's a young person out there that's really, obviously the game and collecting has changed greatly. What advice would you give them if they wanted to start a collection and they just wanted to get going? Is there certain things they should try to do? Obviously, the internet has helped with correspondence, getting to agents, different things like that. What advice would you give to someone that really wants to start collecting?
I do it myself. Cards. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of different cards out there today. It wasn't like when I grew up. That was just Tops. That was it. I think Philadelphia company had it for a little while, too. I know they did a lot of AFL cards because I got a ton of them, of the old AFL. But I got AFL ABA cards.
Oh, my God. I'm a big AFL guy. So,
so I have them. From the first year of Philadelphia put it out on. And then it sort of incorporated into Tops. And then after that, in the 80s, it blew. They had 5,000 different companies at that particular time. Find you a good company. Panini is one of them now, big time. Mm-hmm. So, and find you maybe a player or two every year you're going to invest in. If it's one card, a rookie card, or two in a rookie card, and see if you can hit. And so my kids always tell the story about my dad was so excited that one year Troy Aikman comes out, Deion Sanders comes out. Man, the late Derek Thomas, unbelievable player.
Oh, boy.
Wow. And that's amazing.
Tony Mandarich. Amazing. And so here's my deal. And Barry Sanders also, same year. So I bought probably two dozen. Aikman, Sanders, Deion, Derek Thomas. But also have two dozen Mandarich. And didn't work with Tony. You know, he reminded me of, like, you know, you'd blow up that balloon and he was all puffed up and everything. And it got in the NFL. He couldn't take what he was taking in college and he wasn't quite the same player. I do give him credit. He did come back and kind of restart his career with the Colts.
Yeah, with the Colts.
To the Green Bay deal. But they always tell that story. You know, my dad was so thrilled. And I couldn't believe that he sort of knew it, that where you go with this. And so every year I'll probably pick three, maybe four players. I don't have any room for card sets anymore. No more room for them for card sets. But I'll pick individual players. And normally I'll buy some early. And then you get a better deal on it because a lot of guys that you're going after, they may not be a big hit in the NFL right off the bat. The prices slide a little bit, and then so you get into there. But, you know, it's collect – if you're going to collect them for an investment, the rookie cards are the ones to get. I think that that's imperative, and you know you can hold them, and you know, and I got cards from when I was a kid, so you know they're over 55 years old, you know, and I look, okay, I could trade it in for this and that. No, they stay into the bitter end with me, so it is what it is. But that would be the advice I would give.
Okay,
pick a couple of three people that you want to invest in that you feel strongly about. Pick from here, not from here. Mm-hmm. And put that little bit of investment in it each and every year into a card or two on a player you think strongly about that could end up being a really, really, really good NFL player.
Wow. That's amazing. Thank you for that. My older brothers actually used to collect as well. So we've always had that as part of our family, starting with my dad and then my brothers. But Sunday is the Super Bowl. It's the Chiefs versus the 49ers. I was wondering, along with I'm sure everyone else, how will you be spending Super Bowl? Where will you be? What is your prediction? And the third part of that is, what do you like to eat on Super Bowl Sunday? What is your go-to? What are your favorites?
Okay, prediction, and I did this back in July. So we try to figure out something to kind of put a show around before training camp starts. So Bobby Hebert, who I do the show with, former NFL quarterback, and it's crazy. He grew up on the bayou, even further south than I live. Him and Coach Joe, I mean, we all sort of in the same age group. And he was like, let's do our Super Bowl picks. And so I picked Kansas City, San Francisco. And I picked Kansas City to repeat and then to be champs. Bob picked San Francisco, Baltimore. And he picked San Francisco to win it all. So one of us is going to be right.
Genius, yep.
And it was a great show just to hear everybody kind of chime in. And so we figured it out. Hey, next year we're going to do 2 hours on that because, you know, everybody has an opinion of it. And so I just think Kansas City defensively is so much better than any other team that Mahomes has played with. All young players. They've had 7 signature draft choices make an impact on that Chiefs defense. It's been a lot through the draft. And the one big guy, Chris Jones, he's phenomenal as a defensive lineman. And you have Mahomes. So I think it'll be a close game. I like Kansas City here to beat San Francisco. I have done all the party stuff, been invited to events, done shows on remote, all this other stuff. I stay home. My kids, son-in-laws are here. My grandkids are here. And I might miss a play. But come on, you can repeat that over and over again. You can watch it again.
Oh, yeah.
And so for me, I'm better off at home watching, not having a lot of distractions, not getting interviewed, so to speak. And that's what, because if you go to an event, you're going to miss a lot. People want to ask you a question. So, and I get it. And I'm fine with it, but I'm better at home. Normally Super Bowl Sunday, it's a shrimp and crab gumbo. And I'll get some smoked sausage and I'll put it on the grill.
Wow.
That's
and so
great.
that for me has been part of the tradition since I decided I'm staying home. You know, it's and I've done all the other stuff and it was fun and everything else, but I enjoy being at home. My grandkids, they got no idea what's going on. They just think it's a football game happening. They really don't care. They want to jump around. They want to do all that stuff. They want to do all that gymnastic stuff in front of you. And so, okay, that's all great and fine. And we all sort of get along with everything. And it's loud, but I get to watch the game at home. And so that's important for me.
Yeah, that's the best, to be with your family. Sounds like you have an amazing, lovely family.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Fortunate.
All right, Mike. Well, we so appreciate you coming on the show. And obviously, you've got a million things going on. Is there anything specifically you'd like us to talk about or plug?
No, I do sports talk Monday through Thursday, you know, on WWL. It's the iconic station in the South and the Big 870 in New Orleans. And I think it's the third oldest radio station in America.
Wow.
We just had our 100th anniversary. It's about a year and a half ago. And, jeez. I grew up listening to WWL. And I'll never forget, like, they used to play jazz music. As a kid, my mom, she used to, I guess they would call it swamp pop today. But it was this country western music. And, you know, my brother and I were, not that again. But at 11 o'clock, she'd put it on WWL and they would play jazz music. Okay, we were just kids. It's your first sort of indoctrination to, you know, that jazz music.
Yeah.
And they would play it for a couple hours. And then she would say, okay, if y'all want to listen to that rock and roll stuff, y'all can. So we would listen to that. But now to work there. And it's gone full time now, 2.5 years. It's fun to do it, and every day coming up with maybe a little bit of a different idea and different swing. We try to get as many diverse guests as we can to give opinions, young, old, middle aged, everybody, former players, non players, just to get on to hear it. And a lot of times when you will call a coach for the first time or a player, they're like, man, WWL, man, I listen to LSU football late at night on a transistor radio, catching LSU football, you know, on a Saturday night. And it's funny how there's a certain age group that remember it for a different reason, because it came in so well. And you, before the internet and everything else, I think after 6 o'clock, it got dark. You could catch it in 45 states. We would have people that were doing fracking work. That were catching it in Idaho and Montana and in the Dakotas. And they would call up, hey, we hear y'all, you know, hear y'all voice. At this time, we hear all these other accents, but we don't hear y'all sort of distinct with it. And so it's great to hear that. Now we get calls from all over the world, people doing jobs if they're, you know, overseas and everything else. And so it's awesome to do. And it's just come trying to make it entertaining and also educational at the same time, to give people another perspective, another idea of the sports world and trying to give a little bit different view of it at times too is there, because we live in a ever-changing world, not just sports, world that yeah. changes not day to day, almost minute to minute. And Mike Ditka said a lot of things here when he was coach with the Saints. But one thing he said that always stuck with me, and he said, if you live in the past, you die in the past. You better evolve. Now, Mike yeah. didn't understand that as a coach. So, but it was a great line, and it does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, Bobby Hebert, I believe, when I was a kid, we saw him with the Oakland Invaders when they won a championship. So, yeah, we remember Bobby well in the Bay Area, and obviously played for the Saints too. But yeah, I always liked him. I loved his long ball.
Yeah, he started with the Michigan Panthers, and so he was not the Cajun Cannon in Louisiana.
Yeah.
At South Lafourche High School or at Northwestern State in Natchitoches.
Yeah.
He became the Cajun Cannon when he was with the Michigan Panthers. That was a
yeah.
rider, because he loved to throw the deep ball to Anthony Carter.
Oh, he was great.
The origin of it, James. That's where it came into play, and he got the nickname Cajun Cannon. So he didn't bring, if you give him something to sign, he ain't signing it just Bobby Hebert. It's Bobby Hebert, Cajun Cannon. And I have, it's probably right behind me, his Michigan Panthers helmet.
Oh.
And so people come in, they say, man, what? I didn't know Bobby Hebert played with the Carolina Panthers. I was like, no, he didn't. That's the Michigan Panthers.
Yeah.
But the USFL, and then he went to the Oakland Invaders, and he tells the story about his dad. God bless him, he passed away. During the COVID time, and his dad was like, Bobby, when you go turn on that air conditioning? Out, you know, in the Bay Area, he was like, Dad, we don't have one. He's like, what do you mean you don't have one? He said, no, we don't yeah. have air conditioning here. He said, you know, we just turn on the fans. It don't get hot enough for air conditioning. Oh, Bobby J, you got to understand that you got to have air conditioning in a house. He didn't quite get, you know, the atmosphere and the temperature. In the Bay was a lot different than here on the Bayou when it gets to like 98 in the summertime and it's 95 degrees humidity. It was a different sort of deal.
Oh yeah. Plus the underwater field, we're below sea level. So the field would get really soggy. And it was funny. Players thought that, or other teams would complain and say the Raiders and the Invaders would water the field. And they never watered the field. It was just that was the way the weather was. So Madden said, I just started telling him we watered the field. So
yeah, and Bobby's yeah. used to playing on it. Come on, we grew up on the bayou.
Yeah. Oh, you guys got that, all that water and humidity.
And so we played on a lot of soggy fields, and Bob was a great competitor. Outstanding NFL quarterback. And we say this all the time. We'll sort of talk about lives after, you know, our careers that we in sports talk. And he's like, man, Mike, I never thought that we would be doing this. I was like, he said, you know, we're not trained to do this. I said, well, every time we talk, people understand we're not trained to do this. We do it a little bit differently. And so we get a big kick out of it. And to see, you know, both of us who grew up here in Cocho, just a little bit farther down on the bayou than Bob, we all sort of, again, the same age to grow up, have these successes in sports. It's been fantastic.
Well, tell Bobby there's an Oakland fan that remembers him. And we definitely appreciated what he did, because he was fun. And especially with Michigan, like you said, with Carter, there's still Ooh. Some highlights on YouTube that just blow me away, some of the passes they did. So tell him he's still appreciated in the Bay Area.
All right, I sure will. He enjoyed his time there. He really mm-hmm. did. And he was like, man, the fans love me, Mike. They thought like I was part of them. You know,
yeah.
You know, like I was part of their family. And the one thing with Bob, if you go up to him and ask. Now he's going to find out everything about you. Where you grew up, what high school you were at, where you live. I mean, I can repeat it because he's like that with everybody. He's great.
We would love to have you both on telling stories. That would be much fun.
You better have like a 3-hour event if that's.
We'll have to do that sometime because, like I said, I'm a big Bobby Hebert fan. I loved his long balls that he threw, and he was fun to watch at Oakland and Bader. I was just a little kid, but it was always really cool to watch him play. So thanks, Mike. It's always a pleasure talking to you. We're going to have you on soon again. And I really would love if Bobby would do it, we would love to have you guys on because with all the old stories and fun things, it would be so much fun. We're going to share Mike's Twitter. That's kind of where he evolves with everything, and he's on everything. So everybody loves him. We're very honored that he would come on the show again because he's so busy. Everybody wants to have him on the show. So thank you again, Mike, so much. And I really enjoyed the stuff Florence did, too, with you and your wife on the float. That was great.
We had a great time. And thank y'all. You're doing a great job. Florence, James, you do a fantastic job. And, you know, what I like about what you do is it's not just about one thing. You kind of spring that rubber band. And, it you know, to me, for podcasts today, it's all about diversity and what you bring to the table. And one guess is maybe not somebody's cup of tea, but somebody else is. And so you guys are doing a great job and wish you the best of luck and success and thank the world of both of you.
Well, we're just really humbled. It means a lot to us, Mike. It really does. Well, you take care. You have a great day. I hope the grandkids aren't too crazy on Sunday and you get to watch the game as much and you just have a great time. Okay.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it. Y'all take care. God bless.
You take care too. God bless you.
Thank you, Bye. Mike.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.